very short break. Up next, coming continuing debate about a commonly used weed killer. While it's banned in much of Europe, atrazine is the second most commonly used weed killer in the United States. It's sprayed on cornfields in the Midwest and on lawns in suburbia. And now comes a report in the journal Public Library of Science 1 that shows that atrazine interacts with genes in fish. Joining me now to talk about it is my guest, Holly Ingraham, is professor of cellular and molecular pharmacology at the University of California. She joins us by phone. Now, welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Ingraham.
Well, thanks for your interest in our work at UCSF.
What new have you uncovered about atrazine that hasn't been published before?
Well, I think what's new is that we've really confirmed and clarified the suspicion that atrazine is an endocrine disruptor. And that's, you know, if you actually go on the manufacturer's website, one of the things that they say is that it does not disrupt endocrine function. And that, I think we clearly show that in zebrafish. And we were able to use zebrafish. They're a fantastic laboratory organism that really allow you to probe the genetic machinery and dig into the, we were able to dig into the mechanism of atrazine using these virtues of zebrafish. And other, of course, other people have looked at the effects of atrazine in other wildlife, such as frogs and alligators and salmon, but we really don't know nearly as much genetic information as we do for zebrafish. Mm-hmm. So we think using zebrafish was really a key to our finding and really showed linked atrazine to a factor that controls endocrine tissue development in both us and in fish.
We're talking about atrazine this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Holly Ingraham. Did you use it in doses that would be found in nature?
Well, actually, that was a surprising thing. You know, we're not environmental toxicologists. We're molecular biologists working on very, very basic scientific questions. And when we put on these doses, we really had to sort of get with the lingo of the toxicologist. And we were really surprised to find some gene changes that occur at 2 parts per billion. And I was so surprised about this calculation, I went in and to the laboratory, and actually I should say that Dr. Suzawa was the lead author on this study, but we went into our laboratory and we made them work through the calculation with us at least 10 times and discovered that at doses of 2 parts per billion, which is actually less than the maximum dose that is allowed in our drinking water, we would see these genetic effects. And so that really sort of blew me away.
Now, we got a note from the Syngenta Corporation, which makes atrazine, and they commented into us saying, contrast this with the study you'll be discussing. Talking about your study, achieved effects only after exposure to atrazine at concentrations greater than 2,000 parts per billion, which do not even approach environmentally relevant levels.
Well, you know, that's not true for the fish studies. We definitely saw effects at 220 and 200 without any problem whatsoever. And then we were starting to see effects in human cells at 200 parts per billion. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that gets really to the controversy about, you know, what kind of doses are out there and what kind of exposures do people that are working with this herbicide get. And, again, you know, I'm not an environmental toxicologist, and I don't feel comfortable answering those questions.
Right.
But we saw genetic effects in human cells that were profound.
So you're not talking about the epidemiology of this, how people get it or whatever. You're just talking about what you found in your laboratory studies.
That's right. That's what.
And there were profound changes that you did not expect.
That's right. So in terms of the zebrafish, we saw the effects, and then we looked in human endocrine cell types. And what was startling is when we looked at atrazine, we found in the genes that changed the most, about over 30% of them were related to some hormone signaling and how how we make our hormones, either how we make our hormones or affecting the hormone synthesis of the hormones themselves.
All right, I'm going to stop you there because we have to take a break, and I want to hear the rest of your explanation, and so I don't want to have to interrupt you again.
Okay.
So stay with us. We'll get back and talk more about atrazine with Holly Ingraham, who is a professor of cellular and molecular pharmacology at the UC San Francisco. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A brief program note. Next Wednesday, Neil Conan broadcasts live from the Newseum again with Talk of the Nation's political junkie Ken Rudin and presidential candidate Ron Paul for the latest on the 2008 campaign. And as always, our weekly trivia question. Now, if you're going to be in Washington on Wednesday and want to join the live audience, send an email to tickets@npr.org. to reserve your complimentary tickets. We're talking this hour about atrazine and its effects on human cells in a laboratory dish with my guest, Holly Ingraham, professor of cellular and molecular pharmacology at the University of California. And when I rudely interrupted Dr. Ingraham, she was about to tell us about that study.
Let's see. Yes, okay. So I was telling you about the genes that actually change when you put atrazine onto human placental cells. We used human placental cells for these studies. And as I said, I was actually very startled to see that so many of the genes that actually were upregulated or amplified, so they changed in response to atrazine when you add atrazine onto these cells, that the majority of the genes are involved in hormone signaling, either by changing genes that produce our steroids in our body, or by changing other hormone signaling mechanisms.
Mm-hmm. And so where do you go from here? What would be your next line of study?
I think what the next thing we're going to do is we want to actually know what atrazine is doing to cells that are in the center of your brain that control satiety and metabolism, because the factor that is targeted by atrazine is actually found in that location. So we'd like to know that. Mm-hmm. And then I think we'd also like to know why endocrine-type cells and endocrine-type tissues are so sensitive to atrazine. We still really haven't figured that out.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible that we're filtering out, even though you put the atrazine in there in this Petri dish, that we might be filtering it out of our bodies or out of the cells?
Well, I'm sure that's the case. I mean, it's complicated. Again, you know, I'm not a toxicologist, and people have looked at bioaccumulation of atrazine in species, and it's definitely there. It stays around for a long time. It's moderately soluble in water. And what's interesting is that the metabolites of atrazine, so the breakdown of atrazine, some of those metabolites are themselves active. We haven't looked at that, but other people have. And a recent study last year actually showed that if they look in urine of humans, they for the most part, they've only been measuring one metabolite, and they're thinking that to really get an accurate picture, they need to measure more. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot more that needs to be done at that level, and then there's really a lot more that needs to be done at a basic science level.
Mm-hmm. Just collecting the data, figuring out how it's working.
Right. Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Dr. Ingraham, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us.
Okay, great.
Holly Ingraham is professor of cellular and molecular pharmacology, University of California, San Francisco, and she joined us by phone.